I'm excited to tell you I'm sitting down today with Tim Good, who is the DA-elect for Johnson County. And I'm excited to talk about what he's doing right now leading up to January 1st of 2025 and what we have to look forward to. Tim, thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that's really impressed me is your willingness to come get a second look at the defense side of things. And I say that because having been a prosecutor, one of my greatest fears was becoming a true believer, someone who only sees things one way. And I could see early on in my career as a prosecutor that the very best prosecutors, in my opinion, were the ones with discernment. They could really see both sides and make decisions accordingly.
Okay, I'd agree with that, yeah.
And as I became a defense attorney, I found that to be true as well. Folks that could really understand, hey, sometimes the state's got it right, and the question's, what's the just outcome here? Not every battle is one that's gonna end up with an all-out war, right? So your decision to work on some defense cases before you took your elected office really impressed me. So tell me about what it's been like for you, what led you to this decision, and I'd love to talk to you more about the future.
Okay. I mean, I think what you said is the great opportunity to see both sides, because it is a two-sided coin. Without defense attorneys, you don't have that check on the state. And without, you know, the state, you don't have justice. And so you have to have both sides to achieve justice, in my opinion. And so I think the opportunity to get to come work here has been a chance to kind of see the other side and also have that kind of break, because I've been a prosecutor for a decade. And so to having that break where I could say, I'm stepping back, about to take office in the or take charge in a different way as a prosecutor than I was before as an assistant. Coming to a defense firm, I think, helps me kind of take that breather and also, like you said, see the other side of cases and also just see how cases can be worked on the other side, because things we'll probably talk about later, there's a lot more to a case than what the state typically knows.
Absolutely. One of the things that became evident to me as a defense attorney and then getting to work with some phenomenal trial lawyers is, as defense attorneys, we have the bandwidth to really dive deep into our cases because we don't have volume, right? And we are intentional about not having volume, particularly here, because we really want to be able to dig in and know everything there is to know about a case. What's it been like for you when you see kind of this side of what can be done?
Well, absolutely. So the volume is tremendously different, right? So as a prosecutor, you have just a constant influx of cases. And most of the time, you don't even get to know your cases until they're getting to that point of either I'm talking to a defense attorney and they're laying down salient facts to say, can you go back and understand this more than just the cursory view of the case? But also typically it's trial. Trial is the thing that causes the prosecutor to say, okay, I really need to get to know my case because I got to build the case at trial. Here, like you said, the volume is much lower. And so you get to work the cases before you ever get to trial, before they maybe even are indicted. And you get to understand, like, what's this case about? And then kind of taking my prosecutor lens, what is a prosecutor going to be looking at this case? Working with law enforcement in investigations before, if we're in the investigative phase, what is law enforcement going to be looking for to better advise clients and say, in this situation, this is the best avenue to either be proactive and do something and address this with the police now, or be kind of a more wait and see approach to see what is law enforcement going to do. That's been fantastic. Also, like what I mentioned before about knowing more about cases, as a prosecutor, even for police, they have the same volume prosecution has. And so the prosecution, it's a snapshot of a case, which is a snapshot from law enforcement. And they start the investigation, typically once the warrant's cut, that is packaged up, given the DA's office. But a case didn't begin there, because there's always history before, and it doesn't end there because there's history that happens after. And that's part of defense that I found very fascinating, honestly, because typically, unless it's a stranger on stranger crime, these parties are going to know each other, and there's going to be a huge backstory that often doesn't get delved into because it doesn't really meet the elements of the offense, per se. But if there's a backstory that can really aid you at trial, can aid you at negotiations with the prosecutor, or even aid you when you're talking to law enforcement. Also, while we have that period of time, which regrettably is a year, two, 3 years, if we're going to trial, things happen here in that period of time. And a lot of times as a prosecutor, I don't know if I've lost a witness. I don't know if which positions and how they feel about how the case should turn out. But the client is usually, because it's somebody they know or somebody in their community, they're highly in tune with what is going on a daily basis. And so as a defense attorney, if you are in tune with your client, you're in a position to better say, okay, this is the time to strike when the iron is hot. When there's been a change of heart, let's say that you have a victim who says, I'm no longer interested in this case anymore. I've seen the rehabilitative measures that someone has taken to fix their life, and I'm no longer looking for that punishment in the judicial system per se.
One of the things you mentioned is you're taking on a new role, going from having been a line prosecutor to now being the head of an entire district attorney's office. Mm-hmm. Over the course of your career, certainly you've seen lawyers, both on the defense side and on the prosecution side, who were exceptional and ones that could do a better job. With that lens, and given the role that you're going into, I'm going to ask you first about prosecutors and then about defense attorneys. But what do you look for in terms of qualities for prosecutors? Prosecutors who have the potential to become or are already great. What qualities are you looking for?
So it kind of depends on how you start. So is your mindset strictly to trial? So then you're looking for someone who does very well in front of a jury. But that really is only half the story, because you could have someone that's phenomenal in front of a jury. But I firmly believe if you lack ethic, if you lack morals, you can win. And if that's the whole goal of prosecution is to win, then you do a good job. If the goal is to seek justice, then you need someone that has discernment before. So you need that person that can sit down and evaluate cases, kind of that cold blood passion of saying what needs to happen, what is the just result, but also can change that and turn on a dime when it's time to go to trial and turn on the charisma and actually present a passionate case to a jury. So I look for somebody that first and foremost really cares about how is this case going to change. And my big thing is it's not so much about the defendant, it's not so much about the victim, but I'm looking, how is this going to better my community, right? And that's my standard for going forth for my prosecutors is every plea deal, every trial you do, is it making community safer or is it making it worse? And if you can justify your decision to plea a case or try a case based off of what is good for the community, then I can back you with that. But that needs to be the lens. You got to have a goal. Because if you enter every case as a plea negotiation or a trial as just a focus on this one thing, you're kind of flitting around without there being a mooring or a North Star you can look to. And so I think the big North Star for me is, how does it impact my community? Are we safer today because we put the case or because we tried it, or are we worse off?
So if I'm hearing you right, it's not just about winning cases that need to be won. And it's not only about seeking justice, but also remembering the community is requiring, expecting, and you're going to provide justice too.
Well, I think justice, so I think with justice, when it's perfectly done, it is going to benefit your community, because it's not just for someone to be wrongfully accused, right? That hurts your community. Whether or not they feel it or not, it hurts your community. It's not just for the criminal to walk free because you were unprepared, you didn't present a good case. It's not just to let someone off easy and light if they walk away and have no change of heart. If you give them a low plea offer, they feel like it's a slap on the wrist. And they go, I can just do this again. There's no consequences. It's just like kind of raising children. If you don't have to do the full measure of something, but if they walk away and go, I'm willing to do that again, it's not a big deal, then things don't change. So for the community, I think all that goes towards justice, all goes towards keeping people safer. There should be a positive result from every plea deal and every trial you do.
So we talked about prosecutors. I'd love to know what defense attorneys can do to become credible or remain credible in your eyes,
okay,
so that they can be the most effective advocates for their clients.
Okay. I think that's it's a much easier question to answer. That's my wheelhouse. I've been doing that for 10 years. So one of those things would be credibility. My general rule is I start with any attorney when I first meet you, I'm going to start you on a base level of I'm going to assume I can trust you. And so if you say, hey, I think you got a case with a bad traffic stop, then I'm going to say, okay, when I find time, I'm going to go back and look at that. If I find that to be true, then your credibility shot up for me, because I know you're not coming with me because regrettably both sides BS each other, right? And so when I have a defense attorney BSing me and not telling me the truth, then if it's just trying to win a case for a client or get me, hopefully I'm too busy and won't have time to look at it, or I get too scared to look into something, that ruins credibility there. But once you build that baseline with me, I have attorneys that will, when they walk up and say, you get a problem with your case, my next lunch break, I'm actually pulling the videos out and looking, because I'm 99% sure that I'm probably dismissing that case or having some change of the offer, because they've never misled me before. And so when you can get to that level, when you get that kind of parity with the prosecution, I think that that's the kind of attorney, if I was going to hire an attorney, that would be the question I'd be asking around, who around here has a reputation as being a straight shooter? And also, who is somebody who's able to go to trial if it doesn't work out, who can go there and fight for me? But I want somebody who's not just the, I can go to trial, I'm the big camera, I can, you know, go after this like a bulldog, who there also has the integrity where the judges trust them, the prosecution trusts them.
I've had the good fortune to be able to assist Richard Alpert at Baylor Law. Mm-hmm. And through that, I've been able to talk to students who are, one, interested in criminal law, but most of them are interested in criminal prosecution.
Okay.
Historically, I don't believe that Johnson County has had any sort of opportunity for individual students to formally even shadow or come in and watch or learn from prosecutors there. Do you have any ideas on whether Johnson County is going to remain the same in that regard, or if you have any plans for a different future?
Okay. I appreciate that question. It's been one of the things I thought we've been lacking in the past and something I want to change in the future. One, giving back to the community. And also, right now we're on a just statewide a prosecutor shortage. A lot of people are not going to prosecution. Part of the problem is because a lot of their internships just don't exist outside the big counties. Tarrant County, Dallas County, Harris County. So having prosecution opportunities to do internships, I think would greatly aid the ability to have more people say, I never saw prosecution as a viable pathway or career command of law school, but it is. For Johnson County, I want to do it particularly because I think it's the best way to hire. When you have someone do interns with you, I'm a firm believer some people are good at interviews and some people aren't. Sometimes the person that's bad at the interview is the best employee you could ever have, while the vice versa can be true. Someone can't fake it for 6 weeks. You figure out, do they show up on time? Are they interested in the law? Can they engage with the staff? It's really big for me that when you work somewhere, first and foremost, you got to get along with the community you're in. If you become the problem or the cancer that comes in and starts deteriorating things, you can be the smartest person in the room. You can be better in trial than anybody else, but that will bring the whole group down. And you see that within the first 6 weeks. So having an internship program absolutely is something I want to do. It's something I'm still trying to figure out. Can I do paid or unpaid? All the dynamics behind that. But absolutely, I think that is the best way for one, for a student to figure out what I want to do in law. Particularly also, a lot of students are thinking, I don't want to go in the courtroom. Public speaking is courtroom. And a lot of students say, transaction feels safe to me. In law school, the Socratic method maybe scared them. And they say, I'm already kind of pulling back from the courtroom idea. But there's a lot of passion, and you're very familiar as being a prosecutor. The joy, even when you face down the stress of being in court and the first initial cases of being nervous, the reward that's on the other side of that. So I think a lot of students, they get a chance to see that and walk a case through for those 6 weeks and hopefully see some jury trials go, it's something I never thought I would do, because that was my situation. I never thought I would do courtroom. I was originally going to do transactional law, and because of the economic downturn in 2008, I wasn't able to do transactional law, which kind of led to other jobs. And then I realized that's not what I wanted to do, but I never thought I wanted to do courtroom until I started doing a job requiring courtroom work, and I fell in love with it. Now imagine if me had had that chance back at a 2L, and I got a chance to sit down and actually be more immersed in the courtroom and go, wait a minute, I like this now. And so even before I get out of law school, my mindset's already shifting towards, I think I want to pursue the courtroom. And also with that, even if you want to pursue courtroom, but prosecution isn't your thing, the most experience you're going to get in a courtroom in your first 5 years from when you pass the bar to after 5 years of being licensed is going to be for a DA's office. And so maybe you want to do personal injury, or maybe you want to do civil rights or anything else you want to do that requires some courtroom experience. If you start on the prosecution side, because courtroom is basically the same. Courtroom in criminal cases and civil cases, 90% the exact same thing. So if you can build your chops, get your reps in the criminal side, I think that translates to anything else you want to do that involves litigation.
Yeah, that answer resonates with me so much. My second year of law school, I had the opportunity to intern at the U.S. Attorney's Office. And up to that point, I had no idea that I would fall in love with criminal law or really understand that there's never a dull day in criminal law.
Exactly.
And that really changed my career trajectory. Something I tell all of our interns is take the opportunity to try out as many different fields that you might be interested in so that you can select by the time you graduate what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great opportunity. What you said about getting trial experience is something I talk to our interns and anyone that applies for an associate position here. As a state prosecutor, you have a massive advantage of there's always a case that you can go try.
Correct, yeah.
And you cannot replicate, under most circumstances, the amount of trial experience you can get. Not on the defense side, not on the civil side. It's virtually impossible to do what you can do as a prosecutor. Mm-hmm. So in 4 years, I was able to have 100 jury trials under my belt. On the defense side, I might have 2 or 3 trials a year. Now, on the civil side, I've been working on the case for the last 2 years, and it might be another 2 years before we see a courtroom or a jury. Mm-hmm. So I love that message to students that if you are even remotely interested in criminal law, mm-hmm. go to a prosecutor's office, see if you like it during that internship, and then perhaps apply and put some years into it. You're either going to fall in love with being a prosecutor or the courtroom, or you're going to say, hey, I can take these skills and make myself valuable even if I want to go into transactional work.
Exactly.
Because I know some of our students will be watching this, is there any advice that you might give a law student as to how they can best position themselves to one day become a prosecutor?
I think the biggest thing, so I mean, if you got trial ad, you can do classes like that, but the rules of evidence, right? That is the, for lack of an older term, like the inside of the Monopoly box. That is the rules of the game, both on the civil side and the criminal side. So the lifeblood of the courtroom is the rules of evidence, right? How do I get evidence in? How do I get something that I know in my case file in front of a jury? Is it going to be through a witness? Is it a document? Is it an exhibit? So knowing the rules of evidence and knowing how they work and interplay and practicing those things is really the thing that when you get someone as a new prosecutor, new trial attorney, that's probably the biggest hangup besides speaking in public is I don't want to look stupid and I don't really know how this works. But when you get the repetition, you realize rules of evidence, they're kind of intuitive, honestly. And once you get them down, then you go, I know how this works. And I'm not worried about it because I'm looking at my case. How am I going to get this in? You identify your witness, your document, and you get that path and you build it forward. So in preparation, I think you nerd out in the rules of evidence. You learn that's the best you can. And that's also, I think, the best way to do this round table with other students, right? You can sit there and you can have flashcards and I can know some rule sites. I mean, when was the last time you were in court where someone's actually citing to the actual rule number? It doesn't happen very often. If you can, it is slick. Do it. But understanding the concept behind the rule and being able to explain to the judge, because what it is about, the judge is hearing quick little pithy arguments from both sides. And if you can use those catchphrases and you can clearly delineate what you're trying to object to, keep in or keep out, and the judge latches onto that, that's going to be all the difference in the courtroom because it's that split second. But it's been all that preparation you did before you got in that courtroom. But understanding the rules, that is also that confidence you're going to have. So when you make that objection, you're more likely to get the just result and get the correct ruling.
Absolutely. So now that you've had some time seeing this side of how cases are put together, mm-hmm. what do you think makes an effective defense attorney?
I think the biggest thing that makes an effective defense attorney is communication, right? So initially the thought is when I say communication, it's communication between the defense attorney and the prosecution. And that's true to some effect. But it's communication between the defense attorney and the client. And that's something I think is often lost. Like you and I, we practice law on a daily basis. And we kind of forget how foreign our world is to someone who has been invited into it by the state, by an indictment, by a complaint. And so now they're doing something like, even when you go to the doctor, you go to the doctor usually on an annual basis, you're familiar with the doctor. Some people plan to go their entire lives and never see an attorney. So, and they haven't planned for that. So that moment, they're kind of thrust into this moment of all of a sudden, I need an attorney. So they come with this, what's happening? I don't understand the process. And we can get very jaded as attorneys and go, I've done this conversation 1,000 times. And so we don't give a whole lot of information. We miss the human aspect, which I think you guys are very good here, is y'all really take every new call is that is someone who's in need. They have a very warm welcome. There's a very clear approach to no matter what emotional, they're high emotion, low emotion, wherever it's at, it's okay because there's somebody that can help you out. And that's the other side of law. Like, you know, there's their counselor of law. We're an attorney and counselor of law. I think that's one of the art forms. Maybe it didn't exist before. I want to say it's lost, but I can't speak to the past. But knowing that part of law is simply, you're now part of this alien world that is my expertise, and I'm here to help you navigate that world. And so here, I can't tell you, there's not a week that doesn't go by that you don't stress, or Anna doesn't stress, or someone on the team doesn't stress. It's about communication with clients, whether it's returning emails, it's returning text, returning phone calls, setting, you know, having a regular schedule that you're going to always check in. Don't let somebody sit out there that's a client and not know what's happening in the case, because that's the big thing. As a prosecutor, I can't tell you how many times I've had defendants try to talk to me, which I can't talk to them, right? But they're like, my attorney is not talking to me, and I want to talk to somebody. I've called their office. They said, leave a message. I've never seen that happen here. And I think so being an effective advocate for a client, it starts there where they know that you're on the same team, and that if I have a question, whether it feels stupid to them or not, complex to them or not, they know they can call and they can get an answer.
I really appreciate that. Over 10 years ago, when I started the firm, there were a couple things I knew. One, there were great attorneys in town.
Mm-hmm.
But I couldn't look around and say I saw attorneys who really valued the client journey, right? And to me, it wasn't just about the destination. It was about the journey, mm-hmm. right? I want to get our clients the best possible outcomes, undoubtedly. But understanding, as you said, they're calling us in a moment of crisis. And in a situation where they probably never expected to be, nonetheless, we've got to get through this. And so guiding them through this and understanding, I can't be jaded, right? I can't be the oncologist who has a poor bedside manner because all I do every day is give bad news, right?
Correct.
It's true. We sometimes have to share bad news, but this is news that is important to the client. It's going to change their life. They have to understand what's going on. They have to make informed decisions. And we really set out to do things differently. And I'm glad that over a decade later, as you come in and you see what we're doing from the inside, you see that we have been true to that original mission. So I really appreciate that.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Are there any other things that you've seen that make defense attorneys particularly effective? And maybe they're thinking outside the box a little bit, but in an effective way.
Okay. It's not common. So when it happened, it was more surprising for me as a prosecutor, but it's also pretty helpful for me as a prosecutor. So generally, I mean, the kind of secret out there is the reason we have dockets, you know, why the judge makes the state show up and the defendant show up and the defense attorney show up is to try to make us talk. That's the whole point. Most civil cases, you don't go to court. The case just trucks along and there's a resolution or there's a trial. In the criminal world, we kind of all three parties to be thrust into a room and forced to talk. It doesn't work that well in one sense, because if that's the only time the defense is talking to their client, then that's not a good time. But then the defense also has to talk to the state. State has 60, 100, 200 cases for that docket. It's hard to talk in any kind of granular detail about something specific about the case. So when I have a defense attorney call me as a prosecutor and say, I have this case and I want to talk to you about it. And it's not, I don't want to talk to you about it in docket tomorrow. It's, can I come by? When are you free? You know, Tuesday afternoon, 2 o'clock. I want to sit down and talk about this specific case on this topic. What that does for me, it really helps me because I get to pull that case file. I get to hone in on what it's going to be. So when I sit across the desk from you, I already know what we're going to talk about. And then you can explain what you want me to consider in that aspect. If we're in court and you're saying, hey, I think this is wrong, the stop and this happened, all this stuff. One, I haven't had a chance to go through the evidence. So you haven't even drawn my attention to what are we going to be talking about? So if we can both kind of sit down, and it's almost like a mediation conference, because we at least know the topic we're coming up both on. And so we get to sit down, and I've had more case resolutions that way. It doesn't happen very often. Most attorneys don't do that on the defense side, and I don't know why. Here, I mean, I have backgrounds in prosecution. I was very familiar with your firm. That's one of the things y'all do on a regular basis. While I'm here, I still see it happening on a regular basis, because a lot of resolution happens in between dockets if you're smart. I've seen it particularly here when y'all work on the investigative phase, from time when a case is still an investigation of the police department. There's different approaches to defense. I think a lot of defense attorneys have a reactive approach, which is we're going to wait and see what happens. Here, I would describe the approach as more proactive, which is I've seen y'all call and talk to the detectives, see what's going on. So that way, there's not, the case is not happening to you. you were part of the case and seen, is there anywhere in that case that we can provide information that is helpful to stop the case at this point? Or when you talk to the prosecution, instead of saying, when's the next docket, and wait until the prosecutor stress the max and try to blitz them with information, hope that has a result. It doesn't. Every time I get blitzed with information and docket, I'm like, I don't have time for this right now. But when you sit down with me and you say, this is the case and this is what we can talk about, you and I can have a really meaningful discussion. And usually we leave that either we both know at least what our positions were, or we can both leave with the resolution. But either way, we got to have a meaningful conversation, which benefits one, the state, because I get to make sure I know exactly what the defense's position is, but more importantly, benefits your client, because your client really got to have the factors you wanted presented heard out in a way that's never going to happen if you approach me in docket.
Yeah, I appreciate that insight. From our side of things, it seems like the only fair thing to do, right? If I come to a docket and a prosecutor has 50 or 100 cases on docket that day, to me, it seems unreasonable to expect the prosecutor to have time to look into an issue I want to talk to them about. To some extent, if I'm doing that, I'm hoping they have time to make the notes about what I just told them about before they have to move on to the next person. I mean, you're, as a defense attorney, putting that prosecutor in a tough position, right? Because they've got to notate that, they've got to go on to the next case. They're dealing with issues that are happening in court, like someone has just provided a dirty UA and is that person going to get taken into custody?
Exactly.
The judge is asking a question that you've got to stop what you're doing and respond to. From our perspective, it seems this is the only reasonable way to do it. But I'm hearing you say not enough defense attorneys are thinking that way.
It's not common. It really isn't. And sometimes the thing that makes the most sense is not the thing that's done. I know some. I can't explain why that is. But I'm just saying, like, what works best, it seems to work on the defense side working here, which seems to work best. And then also on the state side also works best. So I think both to state defense, it benefits both sides when law is practiced that way, because we actually get to have a meaningful conversation versus what you just described, which the hectic, I'm trying to give in good faith listening to what you're trying to say.
Right.
But like you said, there's so much happening in that courtroom that I can't. And then, like you said, you're hoping I'm taking notes. But generally I'm not, because I don't have time. I'm trying to hope that when I sit down during my lunch break and I eat my sandwich, I've typed down that, you know, Benson told me these things, but I'm definitely typing those things down and taking notes when we're sitting down at the designated time and we actually get to have a real meaningful conversation.
The part about being involved as a defense attorney during the investigative phase or the pre-indictment phase, I think it's tempting as a defense attorney to wait and see, take that approach.
Absolutely.
And part of it comes from almost a mentality of, well, I know what's going to happen. They're going to file the case, then we're going to have to deal with it. Or it's going to get indicted, and then I'll have to deal with it. But the reality is there are times where being proactive could end the progression of an investigation or give through the prosecutor, the grand jury, some additional information to consider that might result in a case not being indicted. And so our approach has been, even if the odds are against you, those wins, such as a case getting no filed or not indicted, are so big and so important to the clients that we should do those things.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, because you may have got that same result from other attorneys 6 months, a year later, when finally the prosecutor realizes this is not a good case, it should never have been filed. But during that period of time, what's happened? Your client's out on bond, they're paying, doing bond conditions, regular UAs, their life is tipped upside down for a year, continued on, for however long it takes. When there's a possibility that back here, you know, day three of the investigation, it could have all stopped right there. Not to mention once you get indicted, right, the criminal history building, all those processes, people lose jobs simply because of an arrest.
Right.
I've seen my time here, there's been cases that have been nipped in the bud before they even get to the arrest phase, right? That means so much more than it is 8 months from now the case gets dismissed.
Right, absolutely. You know, if you're in criminal courtrooms, a phrase that you hear a lot, particularly from defense attorneys, is that the state has unlimited resources. We both know that although the state has vast resources, there's almost an endless supply line of new cases coming in. So,
correct.
From your perspective as a prosecutor and soon to be seated as the elected district attorney, it's really a question of finite resources, how many courtrooms you have, how many weeks there are in the year, how many cases can actually go to trial.
Correct.
And there's some statutory provisions that tell us which cases should go to trial. But What does your community expect, or what do you anticipate will be where most of the jury trials are focused under your administration?
Okay, I appreciate that question. I mean, you're absolutely right. So there is this perception the state has infinite resources. And I mean, I would differ in the sense that really not when you could break down the resources per individual case. A lot of times defense, in my opinion, has a better, like I said, they have a better grasp of the entire case than we do on a single individual case. But the question you're asking is, how do we prioritize out of all these sea of cases, which ones are eventually going to make it to trial? And I think it goes back to one of my guiding principles, which is going to make my community safer? Is it going to make it better? And so that's not going to be a one type of case or this type of case. Generally, there is going to be more of a focus more on, I think, violent crime and crimes against kids is a bigger impact. When there's flesh and blood victims that suffer a wrong, those are the types of cases that definitely need to be addressed quickly. And also even the statutes line up, like you mentioned, the preference statutorily, which cases go first, murder, sexual assault of kids. Those would be my top priorities. Now, I am differing somewhat in the sense that some prosecutions, offices, they decide, well, we're only going to try these types of cases and these other ones we're always going to plea out. There's always going to be a wild card of today we're going to try a state jail dope case simply because there's not going to be a type of case we're not willing to go to jury trial on. So that way, because if I ever establish a principle that, oh, thefts under this amount or this type of dope case, I'm not going to try. No one's ever going to plea and work those cases out, right?
Right.
So I cannot try every drug case there is, but I'm guaranteed that I'm going to be picking cases out and saying, we're going to hit these to make sure there's a precedent. Your lottery ticket can come due and you can end up in trial. But ultimately, I think it is the cases, the ones that keep us up at night, the kind of cases that when you read in the paper, you go, I feel less safe in my community right now. Those are the ones, because once again, also we're asking people from the community to come in there and give up a week, 2 weeks of their time. It should be something worth them hearing. It should be something when they get done, they go, I'm glad I was here. I'm glad I got to make a decision, because they too should feel what that my goal is, which is when they leave, they have made their community safer. So whatever form or fashion that takes, those are the cases they're ones who are going to drive the trial docket for me.
Really appreciate it, Tim. I'm really looking forward to what you're going to do for the community, the inroads that you're going to be making with law schools. I'm thrilled about that. I'm thrilled to be able to share with the students at Baylor and A&M and other schools that we work with that, you know, there's a friendly DA's office that's looking for people who are interested in criminal law and wanting to create some opportunities for them. And I'll tell you, this is someone who has worked with Richard Alpert a lot at Baylor, who's placing students all over the state. What he's looking for are good quality DA's offices, and the leadership, in particular with district attorney's office, the elected DA makes a world of difference. I've seen students being referred to offices under one administration, and when that administration changes, no longer being referred there, right? Because who's at the top matters so much. So I'm really looking forward to what you're going to be doing, and I appreciate the time that you've taken
to
talk to folks today.
Thank you, Benson.
Okay, when we started, I called you the DA-elect, but as we sit here today, it's October 25th.
Correct.
We're in early voting.
We're voting right now.
So officially, you're kind of the presumptive DA-elect because you don't have an opponent.
I guess that's the best way to say presumptive DA-elect. Yeah, because I don't have an opponent. As long as one person votes, I've had, I don't know, 20, 30 people text and call me. They've already voted for me. So presumably, I am going to be the DA-elect, barring something crazy happening.
That's right.
Right?
Yes.
But I guess
26 write-ins.
Yeah, exactly. That would cancel the 25. Yes. Absolutely. So yeah, I guess presumptive DA-elect is the closest we can get to an official title.
Okay. So that leads me to perhaps the most important question of this interview.
Okay. Now I'm nervous.
Have you gone to vote for yourself yet?
No. So I'm going to go vote. That's a weird thing, right? Voting for oneself. I'm going to go vote tomorrow. It's going to be Saturday. I want to take my boys.
Wonderful.
And so I want them to go with me to see voting process. It's also really cute during the election because all the election signs stocked our house. And my sons would be like, what's the sign saying? They can't read. They're too young. They're 4 and 2. And the sign says, vote to daddy, is what they thought. And so that's what they always saw the signs out there in public. They say, that sign, vote to daddy. So kind of full circle, they're going to go with me and see me vote.
That's fantastic.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.